Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey, everybody, welcome.
And I'm Adam.
And we're doing a little bit of a different thing this week. I mean, it's not something we haven't done before, but we don't have any... Well, I guess The Last of Us is major, but...
Yeah.
We don't have a movie... Like, I haven't watched any movies.
I've watched all the movies, but, you know, we're actually recording... Like, you know, full disclosure, we're recording this on a Thursday before... a post New Year's or post Easter weekend after we had talked Sinners. So this weekend is kind of dry because they're, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but like it seems like Sinners is actually kind of cleaning up at the box office.
I was going to say, since you brought that up, like I think we didn't really touch on that when we recorded, because we recorded on Sunday last week, right?
Yes.
So. Yeah. Like, there was a little bit of, like, yeah, it's doing okay, but then by the time Monday afternoon rolled around, it's like, oh, it made damn near $50 million, which...
For a non-IP
yeah.
horror movie, a rated R horror movie is, like, what I love is because you add in, if you add in anything at the beginning called black, there's all this, like... All this like, oh, well, you know, it's the end of the industry because of the Ryan Coogler deal. Well, it could have done better. And I'm like thinking to myself.
Who was it that published that article that Ben Stiller like was like, hey, if can you imagine writing this headline if this were, I don't know, an M. Night Shyamalan movie or a Ron Howard movie? He didn't say specifically those people,
yeah.
But like. If this were not a black director, would you be writing a headline that's like, this movie made almost $50 million, but it probably needs to make close to 100 or 150 to really be some. I forget what the headline was, but
yeah, it was Variety.
It
was Variety of all things. And then like everybody under. Okay. So like, here's my favorite part is that they never mentioned that everybody that did box office tracking, literally when Warner Brothers released the figure that it was 48 million, every single box office place underwrote it. They didn't listen to Warner Brothers. They said it made $45 million when it really made 48. And I just, it's wild to think that a movie that is this successful, that's actually proving to be like what the theaters need right now, right? Which is movies that are bringing people in and are talking and they're shitting on it. I'm like, what is going on here?
It feels really, really weird, man. Like, yep. We were not having this kind of discussion when... Everything Everywhere All at Once was gaining like box office momentum. Week yeah. over week over week. We were not having a discussion about like, oh, well, you know, it costs this much. And, you know, like, I mean, I'm sure there were smaller discussions about that, but it wasn't the Variety headline was like, hey, this movie jumped up in box office again. It gained week over week over week over week. Now, I don't... This Sinners opened wide, so it's not going to do that. It will, you know, drop week after week after week, or at very least barely maintain for a couple of weeks. Maybe this week. By the time we get to the next weekend... And unless I'm wrong, I think Thunderbolts is probably going to clean up, but yeah. but that's not you know like a tragedy. It's what happens, and I'm just for a movie that I thought was good. Mm-hmm. Like I had a lot of positive things to say about it. Like it felt really weird to like see all. That stuff, specifically that one headline, and be like, I didn't love this movie either. I thought it was just good, but I'm fucking impressed that they were able to do what they did and what they did quickly. Like, I know I had a lengthy post-production, but didn't they film this in like 10 days or something?
Yeah, it was 2 weekends. It was over the course of two weekends, like, because they wanted to keep everything very quiet, and they wanted, like, and I mean, they worked on the script for 10 years. So they had the script that they wanted by this point. But literally they were like, we're going to do this in really quickly in private with our crews who can keep their mouths shut so that nobody knows exactly what this thing is going to be. And then we control the narrative. And, like, you know what? It's proving to me that Coogler was 100%. Coogler and Jordan were absolutely 100% right to keep this narrative and keep their own narrative to this, because the headlines are proving it. It's like, so you guys aren't looking at it as the success that it is. You're looking at it like, oh, well, it's not going to make that much money. How do you know that? How do you know that word of mouth isn't going to get around and people go see this movie? Like, it's so wild to me. Like, it's just like, I'm just like, oh God.
But what
it
has, like, that's what blows my mind, is like, what it's done already is pretty substantial.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know what the budget was, but I don't think it was $100 million.
No, it was like 85 to 90. That's what they're saying that the figure was. Is 85 to 90. Advertising. I'm sorry, I just lost you. I can barely hear you.
Hello.
I can hear you, but you're super low. It's like super, super low. Hold on a second. I'm gonna close out of mine and go back in, okay?
Nah, it's not your fault. Maybe it had something to do with Teams and Skype being open at the same time. Yeah, I got to figure out how to record in Teams, because there's not a clear record button, but I know you can record Teams calls. So, anyway, all right, so back at it. Where were we?
We were just talking about the box office and how, like, you know, it's just, other than like Thunderbolts coming up, which, well, of course, will take control of the box office.
Yeah.
We're
talking about how much it costs. Like, even
it was like $90 million.
Yeah.
Like, so
it'll, over the course of a month and a half, 2 months, it'll make its money. Like,
yeah.
With the worldwide box office.
Exactly. And that's not even including home video sales, streaming sales, all that good stuff. So, like, you know what? Honestly, it's, we know what it is realistically, and you know what,
for Hollywood, the quote liberal elite or whatever, to have, like, it proves, which I think a lot of things in the last 4 or 5 months have proven, that, like, oh, people, these companies, these businesses, Hollywood, like, they're only, quote, moral or good or on the side of, you know, fair or equity, inclusion, all that stuff, when it's the trendy thing to do. You know, like, the minute you can just be kind of blatantly racist, you are.
Shitty. Yeah. Like, it's truly wild to me. And you know what? That's fine. Like, you know what? The movie's going to make money. Like, and that's all that matters. You know what? You can say whatever narrative you want to and go right ahead. Like, go right ahead and just prove what we already know, which is you don't care as long as it's making you money and as long as you're licking the boots of the right people. And then, you know what? That's fine. It's a wild thing to watch. I was like watching this unfold, and I'm like, you do realize that your business matters. Like, if theaters go away and you keep on doing this, you do realize you're going to be without a fucking job, you idiots. So go ahead and do that. because entertainment reporting, half of it is movies, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you know,
I just looked up Box Office Mojo. Like, as of like yesterday, it's made 80 million worldwide. So, I mean, that's still pretty damn good.
Yeah, for an 80 for an R-rated horror film. Like, let that sink in. Like, that is like, I just don't get it. Like, I, like, to be perfectly honest, it's just, it's a wild thing to like that's what you're gonna subvert in the way of narratives. Okay, I mean, go right ahead. You know, so yeah, it's just, it's wild. It's really wild. Yeah, but we'll continue to see that. I'm fairly certain we're going to continue to see this kind of weird narrative stuff. But
I mean, Thunderbolts is tracking for what, like 70. So even if it opens bigger than that, I mean, that's okay. $80 million. I mean, for a movie that's trying to appeal to everyone, it is a piece of current, like the current thing in pop culture, even though, you know, it's been predicting like, oh, superhero movies are dying for 5 or 6 years now, and there's still a large chunk of what people do actually get out and go see. Yeah,
exactly.
I don't know. It's just bizarre, but we don't have to waste any more time on it. I will say this. It has been really interesting, like, listening to people's discussions on this movie and having discussions of my own about this movie. Like, seeing it from different perspectives, like, you know, trying to not really think about the things that I think are wrong with the movie. The other thing is, it has been nice to see a lot of people be like, yeah, man, if you trim like 30 minutes, 20 minutes out of this movie, it's banging. It, like, it's just firing everywhere, but there's some slowness to it. Now, I think the debate is where that 20 minutes should come from, but because I think the first hour of this movie is damn near perfect.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
But yeah, like, it's, I don't know. It's going to be really, really interesting to see what it does this week, because nothing's really opening this week. Like, Revenge of the Sith might take a chunk, and then you have another horror movie opening, I think, alongside that, right?
Yeah.
Which looks interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it looks okay. I mean, it's a very video gamey kind of thing. And so, you know, I mean, yeah. Yeah, I mean, other than that, and then, of course, Minecraft, like, you know, it doesn't have any really stiff competition. So yeah, we're going to definitely see.
Minecraft's not, wouldn't take from the audience of this movie. And
no.
Sinners has such a buzz to it now that,
yeah,
I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it cracks another 40. Like,
it could very well. It could very well. And then that creates another narrative of, like, so it doesn't do any bot, like, you know, it's going to be funny because, like, you know, audiences will speak to it, right? More than anything else, whatever happens with the audience itself is what's going to really matter. Because, you know, I mean, does Warner Brothers really give a shit if it's making its money? No, it really doesn't. You know, it doesn't care if it's not. It cares that it's making money. And that's the ultimate thing in regards to this movie, is that if it's making money, ain't nobody going to complain about anything.
And this is also a studio that has literally shit on things it dumped money into.
Yeah.
So the fact that they still believed enough to put it out, like, even if it's to keep a relationship with Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler, even if it's just to continue to foster that so that they don't wind up Nolan-less again, you know?
Yeah.
then okay. But yeah, I mean,
but that's not a bad thing,
it's
right?
Not if Warner Brothers had done something like this with Nolan for Tenet, right? That was the movie that was the last straw. Then, and I know that was during COVID, and that's a little different. He was maybe being a little too rigid, but give the man what he wants, and then when it fails, just be like, you know, not for nothing, but you know, we kind of could told see you. This coming.
Yeah,
but,
I told you.
Yeah, don't do what you did. You know, it's just a weird narrative. Instead of like publications celebrating, it's like, I don't know. It's like I said, if it makes another $40 million this weekend, then we're talking the movie's like cracked 140, 150 worldwide. And then it's like, okay, well, what's your narrative now, man? This movie that cost between 80 and 90 million has all but made its money back in 2 weeks.
Exactly.
So.
Like what now then? What now? Please tell me what now. Because I'd really like to know what your thoughts on this are. Because it's definitely not, like, it's just, I don't know, man, it's wild. I just kind of look at it all and go, what is going on here? Like, what are you doing? But anywho, it's not me. It's not me. Like, you know, I liked it. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I'm going to watch it more than once. I'll probably own it on 4K.
Spencer texted me after he watched it. And he was like, I think it's a masterpiece. And I was like, I think it's about 75% of a really great movie. But, like, I get that people are feeling that. But, A, because we're stuck in this, like, dearth of, like, good original material. So, but like, there's just not any good original stories. So being told, like, studios don't want to give the money for that. You know, I mean, I think the last one on this level was probably Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah. And that was 2 years, almost 3 years ago now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just wild that that's the case. Yeah, something that, like, something as original but within the realm of genre, like, yeah, I mean, like, it's been a long time. It's probably been that. And I mean, it's just, it's going to be interesting to see what, if they're going to continue this narrative, especially one, like,
I don't think there's any way. I mean, if it only drops like 15 million this weekend, then yeah, you might see a little more of that. But if it comes off of a chunk of change this weekend, I don't think anybody's talking like, oh, well, it's still got to make another $50 million. Like, no. Because even when Thunderbolts comes out, it still might pull $15 million. So.
Yeah. You know, and like I said, it, like, where the real money is the premier streaming cost, because they'll get $24.99 each of those. And, you know, that's where they're going to make their money. I mean, you know, like take Mickey 17 as an example, right? Like, that made another $25 million to $30 million in the premier VOD market. And that wasn't even like, that was considered a failure. I mean, it made what? It made like 50 to 60 million at the box office, and it still made an extra 20.
What it cost, like 120 or something, 110 or something like that?
I mean, it made huge box office in Asia. Like, it made 100, like, total, I think they said it was at like 150, but then it goes to the premier VOD market and makes a ton of money there. And it's like, what they're not saying, and the reason why they're not saying it is because they don't like to share profits or share profit notifications, is that they're making a boatload off of premier streaming. They just don't want to say it, because then that means that they have to stop their phony accounting. It's just all corporate arbitrage. Like, it's just, it's ridiculous. Like, you know, it's like whatchamacallit just premiered this week. Captain America premiered this week. And like rumors are, because they don't have to report it, rumors are that made a boatload of money too. That made like $50 to $60 million off of premiere VOD. Premiere VOD, not even like it was showing on like Disney Plus. Like people paid $30 a pop to buy this movie, or $20 a pop to rent it.
The dipshit that runs Netflix, who, you know, isn't
Ted Serrano's
the I think it was him, or it might have been the other. Who's the other guy at Netflix that's always spouting off in the news?
Oh, I can't think of it.
Hastings or something like
Hastings,
that.
Yeah, Reed Hastings.
Yeah.
What a white.
It might have been Reed Hastings, because this sounds right. Here's the thing. No love for the guy, but like, he definitely knows what he's talking about in certain aspects. He was like asked about theater going, like the dwindling numbers, and I mean he basically said because people don't want to pay, you know, upwards of $20 to go see a movie, to have it ruined, to also have to pay an exorbitant amount for snacks at the theater. You can't bring stuff. You're not supposed to bring stuff in. He it's not feasible for most families to do this now. And so if your kid's clamoring for the latest Marvel movie, you're like, well, when it hits a VOD, I guess I'm just going to spend the $30 to get it or whatever. Because that's still cheaper than going to the movie theater. And until they do something about that, you know, this we're going to see it continue to dwindle. And it's funny because it's not to get into too historical stuff, but like, it's so reminiscent of what happens in art over and over and over again, specifically performance art, is that the people it's meant to entertain get absolutely priced out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say how much because she listens to this podcast, but I'm going to see Back to the Future, the musical, in September in Atlanta.
Yeah. Okay, great. That's awesome. I love it.
I won't say how much the tickets I paid for were, but mm-hmm. tickets in the lower level, about, let's say, halfway to the stage. And I know it's difficult because I'd have to describe the theater, but it's a moderately sized, like, actual production theater, were $900 a piece. $900 a piece.
Yeah. Fuck
for
you.
The like, touring like, show.
For the touring show. Not even like Broadway.
Yes.
Yeah. Because like, and let's be honest, Broadway is it's what sucks is that Broadway is probably cheaper.
Yeah, that's now, what I told her. I was looking at, because she does like to sit really close. She's like, let's go. Let's enjoy the experience. We're going to see Hamilton Sunday, by the way.
Nice.
Yeah, awesome. I will let you know what I think.
Okay.
So I looked at really close tickets, and I was just like, not for nothing, but like, I think we could hop on a plane and not catch this show on Broadway, but catch a Broadway show for $1,800 plus fees.
Well, and here's the wild part about like you going, like if you were to choosing to do that, right? Like right now, because it's the 10th year anniversary, they're having special guests show up, like original cast members on the Broadway at the Rogers Theater. So you literally could go and you could possibly see somebody like David Diggs play his original role. Because, like, that's a thing. And he's playing it for, like, say, a couple of nights. Like, you know, he comes out to New York and does it for, like, and they're doing it for, in the name of, like, you know, charity and all this other good stuff.
Yeah.
But, like Leslie Odom Jr. is, like, I think in October, he's doing a whole month where he's playing, where he's reprising his role at the Rogers Theater, playing Aaron Burr. Like, what? And you could probably see it. Like, but, I mean, more to your point. your point exactly. It's like, I love the theater, but at this point, I'm priced out of it. A guy who makes a good living. I make a good living. I have a dual income.
We're almost in the same boat. Stephanie and I obviously aren't married, not living together, but it is kind of a dual income, no kids situation. We can afford to do almost anything we want, but when you look at something like that, it's like, you know, we discuss, we're going to see Revenge of the Sith tomorrow. We discuss literally changing like our sleep schedule and everything to make an earlier show so we could get the matinee price, because it's literally almost half the price. I was like, we're not going to do that. We do that for a lot of movies. It's Revenge of the Sith. We've seen it a bunch. We'll just go to a later show. We'll go get dinner. It's fine. Like, we save where we can. But like, when you look at like, it's going to cost us $40 to go see this movie versus it's going to cost us $18 to go see this movie. That's frustrating, man. And you look at somebody who has three kids, even if it's a two-income family with three kids, it's like, okay, well, if we're all five going to go, it's going to cost us almost $100 to get in the door if we're not going to, like, a Tuesday matinee.
Yep.
And then, of course, the kids want snacks. But anyway, Reed Hastings' point was like, and to the point of like, why it something like Sinners, it still would have made almost $50 million 15 years ago, but that $50 million would have been like, holy shit, this movie made $50 million.
Exactly. Because it was, because like, you know, the income gap is not there. Like the inflation and the cost of, like, you know, bleeding us dry over everything, it hasn't come to a head, but now it is. Like as an like another one, like sports events, right? Like cheap like Dodger tickets, right? Like, I wanted to go to a Dodger game on my birthday, and it wasn't anything. They weren't playing a good team around my birthday. And do you know how much cheap seat tickets were? Cheap seats. I'm talking the worst possible tickets you could get.
$50.
$60. $60 a piece. $60 a piece.
And that's not including parking, which if you don't want to, like, I imagine it's a ways for you. So you got to drive. You got to pay to park, because that Uber ride would be ridiculous. Yep. So that's probably another, even if you're paying to park and walking a little bit, or if they're like, Atlanta has little tram things that they'll ride by and pick you up. I mean, that's still another $25 on top of that. If not more.
It's even more, dude. Like Chavez Ravine, where the place that does the parking, $50. $50, dude. So like, you're looking at literally before, not even a not drinks, not like terrible fucking tasting hot dogs or nachos or whatever.
Yeah. It's insane. You're priced out of the thing that you enjoy. And then on top of that, you're these streaming things.
Yeah.
Like, it make it impossible for you to watch the team. I don't even watch the Braves anymore. I listen to them on the radio. Like, 680 The Fan is the Atlanta station that carries them. They have an app. You just download the app and you launch it when the Braves are playing, and you can just listen to the game. Like, I know it's very, very fucking, like, this is 1940, but I don't have to pay anybody any money. I don't have to worry if the game is blacked out or whatever. And, you know, I don't know. It's very frustrating to watch. It's happened with sports. It's happened with theater. It's happening with the movies. It's happened with, like I said, a lot of performance art. You just, like, you can't afford to do it. And even when, like us, we can afford to do it, you look at it and just be like, this is insane how much this costs.
Yeah. It's literally like, and it's not just that, it's like physical media. And I take hit on physical media.
How much does that 4K Blu-ray of Tombstone cost?
Yeah, $50. But like, they have...
And now you can't even get it. It's because they're sold out.
Yep. All because, and if you didn't get it when, it's not even FOMO, it's literally you missed out. If you didn't get it, my favorite Ridley Scott movie besides Alien, because I mean, you know, let's be honest, Alien is the best, right? I mean, it's just, there's no contest to it. But my second favorite, my favorite, when you don't consider that the Stone Cold classic, is Kingdom of Heaven. And they have a 4K of it. I bit the bullet and I bought it, but you don't want to know how much I paid for it, because it was a limited edition steelbook and they don't have a regular edition of it. And it's the only way to get it in 4K, but I'm not going to miss out like I missed out on Tombstone, one of my favorite Westerns. So I ended up ponying up the money, but at least I know that that can't be taken away from me. It's not a digital copy that'll go away someday. It's literally like I have that 4K, right? And it's got all the bells and whistles from before. So I don't have to worry about special features not being there. But at the same time, it's like I can only do that purchase nowadays because of the cost of it once in a blue moon. And this is a recent event. This is literally within the last 8 months that this has been a where I'm like, fuck you, I'm not paying that. I'm not paying $25 for a Blu-ray when a year ago I was paying $10 for the same Blu-ray.
Yeah.
It's especially when I'm when every surf, literally they I love it. Just this is what happens when Silicon Valley gets involved with something, is that they say that they're disrupting prices, but they're not really. All they're really doing is they're tearing it apart and charging you everything as a piecemeal price. It's like, oh yeah, you can buy a car, and the car will only cost you $10,000, but it's going to cost you $20,000 for the tires, $15,000 for the transmission. Oh, you want seats? Oh, that's another $10,000. And before you know it, the car that used to cost $20,000 is now $85,000.
I just bought a brand new iPhone, and I knew going in that you don't get anything with the iPhone now, but I was still just kind of flabbergasted, it opening the box and being like, oh, it's the phone and the cable.
Yeah, that's it.
You don't get the little box to plug the USB thing into.
Nope.
You don't get, I realize that maybe the headphones aren't a thing anymore, but you don't get any kind of headphones. And I mean, this thing was $1,200. Like, what?
Yeah. I right? It's flabbergasting. Okay. And it's only gonna go up. And I'm and I hate to be I'm not this is not an old man rant thing. This is literally
I know this could feel like us, two old men shake fist at cloud. So
yeah, but it's not. I mean, it's literally sitting here going like people younger than us make less money than us. I don't know how they're surviving.
Oh, me either. There are people that I work with that I'm just like, I don't know how you're existing, because I would be so depressed, and I'm already a depressive person, that I would be like, I just want to check out, man. I just want to check out. I don't want to be done. I'm tired of paying so much money for food. Now you're priced out of the entertainment that you love. You're getting priced out of the food that you enjoy. I saw somebody post the other day about they were watching an old episode of Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. I'm talking about 2015. I know 10 years was a long time ago, but It was like 2015, I think is what they said, maybe 2017. And they were talking about a burger that he was eating, and that they listed the price of the burger at this restaurant. It was like $7. And the guy said, I went to the restaurant's website and looked up the burger for what it would cost today. It's like $17.
Oh, Jesus.
And it's like, this is what we're talking about, man. Like,
yeah,
that's so crazy.
It is. It really is. It's like, and so it's like, I've gotten to the point now where it's like, now my website literally pays for itself, because half the movies, like more than half the movies, I'd say like it went from a quarter of the movie intakes that I was having were from the website. Now about 85% of the movies that I watch are from the press things and the coverage that I do with the movie, like with the site. 85% of my content comes from that stuff. Yeah,
because like, oh, I got this, or I got access to the screening, or because it used to kind of, when I started listening to like the film cast way back when, like every once in a while they'd be like, we spent our own money to go see this, and I think you spent like $10, like what are you talking about? But now when they say it, I'm just like, oh shit, like Dave paid $40 of his own money to go watch this to talk about it. Like, that's crazy.
Exactly. No, and that's 100% right, right? Like, I mean, I own 2 AMC A-list stubs. But you know what? All I need to do is, me and my wife just need to go see one movie a month, and it pays for itself.
Yeah.
Now
I'm debating on signing up for that. So
for 20, I mean,
we're going to a movie every week at this point.
And it's summertime. It's going to be worse, right? And so, like, I look at it, and the great part is that if you have, as long as you have her ID, you can add her onto your app. And that's what we do now. Like, Sinners didn't cost me a thing. But if I went to go see, because I went to go see it in IMAX 70, it would have, the price is $34.95 a ticket. So I basically, for the month of April, paid for, even though we went to go see Minecraft, which was another, like, regular IMAX is $24.95, so that's $50. So, like, literally $120 worth of tickets for only two movies paid for itself for $24.95 a month. And that doesn't include, like, the benefits. Like, I don't get charged. I get charged a regular size for a large Coke and a regular size for popcorn, to which that's saving $2. $2 is $2 right now.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, man. And you probably already know this, because now you have a girlfriend that you go see movies with. The purse becomes the golden savior, man. Fucking Chex Mix.
Oh, yeah. She has this giant purse. Yeah.
Yep.
She won't drink during the movie because she's gonna listen to this and be like, why are you talking about me? But yeah, like, she's like, I don't want to get up and have to go to the bathroom. And I'm a little more like, I, unless the movie's 3 hours long, I'm usually good about like, nah, I'm good. Like, I can regulate myself and like not down a drink and but yeah, so she's fine. But she, like, after like our second or third movie, she was like, you know, I can just like sneak stuff in, right?
Yeah.
Like,
and it's so,
you're spending like massive amounts of money on, you're eating half the popcorn because there's no, you're not eating that whole thing of popcorn,
no.
And you're getting a drink that is just way too much.
Like, literally, dude, like, I literally sit there, and you know what I bring in? I, like, when my wife is there, like, when we go, two cans of sparkling water and some Chex Mix, man. And, dude, better than anything else. I mean, and it saves me literally $40. Because if we share a Coke and a regular size Coke and popcorn here, is still, like, you're spending $8 on the drink and another, I think it's like $14 for the popcorn. So $22 for something that you're like, if I drink this, I'm going to have to go to the bathroom like 8 times in the movie. And if I eat this, I'm going to have shit in my teeth for the rest of the night, between my teeth. And it's just like, yeah, like, yeah, I don't care. I don't care. I'll say it. I'm cheap. I'm not even cheap. Like, I used to hate it when my dad did that, but my dad was cheap because back in the day, it only cost us, what, $2.50 for a matinee when I was a kid? You know? I mean, hell, even like 7 years ago, or even a decade ago in 2015, like, matinees were still, like, less than $10.
Dude. We didn't have a we used to call it the dollar theater, like the disc of the second run theater. Didn't have a dollar theater anymore, but 10 or 15 years ago, it was like $5. We had a second run theater, and it was like $5 during the day, $7 at night, and like that's gone.
Yeah, ours is gone too. Like, we had a second run theater that was $2.50, like, it was literally $2.50 for matinees up until 6 o'clock, dude. 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. You could go. And now the matinee is like, oh, it's before 2.
You're paying premium prices after 2 o'clock. But dude, like, do you know how many movies I used to go see at the $2 theater? Because I could just, like, I would get off early, and my wife's not, like, you know, I, like, we work very different schedules, and I would just go on a Thursday or a Friday, or sometimes I'd go both. And for, like, and then they had dollar hot dogs and $2 drinks. So, like, you could literally get a movie in for $5. And the thing was that the theater was literally a theater, like, was literally a state-of-the-art theater, like, 4 years before. It had digital. It had digital sound. It had great picture. The only difference was that it was showing movies that were, like, you know, 4 months old, right? So, like, if I didn't get to catch it, I'd just go see it. And it was cheaper to watch it there than to like buy it on Apple, right? And rent it on Apple. So, like, just go down to the theater and watch. I loved my second run theater. I mean, like, you know, I could watch 3 movies. I used to do it. I used to do 3 movies in a row. What the fuck does it matter? $6 for the entire day.
One of my best birthday memories is, sorry, turned into something we were not intending a podcast about.
No, but we were not.
One of my best, but like on my birthday, this was, God, it was when Inferno came out, the Tom Hanks, that was the third one. So whatever Brothers Bloom was out, Inferno, I think it was Inferno. So we still had the discount theater, and, it might have been, I don't think it was $5. I think it was still $2 in the afternoon. And so I got up that morning and I went to the movie theater and I spent I saw 4 movies. I saw Drag Me to Hell. I saw Inferno. Then I saw Drag Me to Hell. Then I saw The Brothers Bloom, which I think that was like my 5th or 6th viewing of The Brothers Bloom. The Brothers Bloom, and then I saw Monsters vs. Aliens.
Oh, dude.
It like, not all great movies, but I remember that fucking day, man. Like, I remember sitting in Inferno, and it was me, and they had a bus of retired people, like, in a community, had come in to watch the first showing of Inferno. And, like, I'm sitting there listening to these old people trying to figure out what was said and what was happening on screen.
Oh, my God.
I think it's Inferno.
That's so great.
It was one of those. It might not have been Inferno. They all kind of run together.
The Dan Brown of it all. Yeah. I mean, like, they were all like second rate national treasures. Let's just be honest. Ron Howard, I feel bad for him that he directed all 3 of them. But yeah, dude, it's just like, it's like, you don't have that anymore, right? Like, there's no,
you couldn't do that, man.
Yeah. I mean, I watched 3 movies in a row and I probably wouldn't be able to pay my electrical bill. I mean, let's just fucking be honest. Like, I mean, I could watch it with my MC Stubbs, but I told you 34, like, if I wanted to see three movies in IMAX 70, right? Like, if there were 3 theaters, That's $35. That's $105.
Yeah.
For three fucking movies in one day. What the hell is that about? Like, so, yeah.
And,
like,
and it's not, like, at least with, like, the theater, you know, when I pay to go see Back to the Future in September, which I've already paid for, but when we go see it, there's not going to be somebody there on their phone. There's not going to be somebody talking back to the, like, yeah, it's ridiculous, but like, I'm paying a lot of money. At least I can rest easy knowing that like the experience is probably going to be okay once I'm in the theater. But yeah, going to the movies,
yeah,
like you're just always taking a chance. Doesn't matter how much it costs. Like, there will be some jackass who ruins your IMAX experience, and the theater doesn't give a shit.
They do not. They absolutely do not. So yeah, like, it's wild, right? Like at the end of the day, it's like I'm spending this money, and like, there's always going to be some asshole. Like, luckily enough, like, our theater, like, our first run premiere theater is designed in such a way that it's like little pods, so you can't see the person in front of you. So I can't see if they're on their phone or not.
That's good.
And
that's like the one thing, like, not to cut you off, but the one
No.
The talking kills me, but generally when I go see a movie and the theater I go see it in, it's not really crowded. I don't really have to worry that much about it, but always, because I like to sit at least about halfway up. Always there is some asshole with their phone out, and I get it, especially if you're not enjoying the movie. I do understand it, but here's the thing. You could turn the fucking brightness down on your phone, man. Like,
yeah.
Why? What is wrong with people? Turn the brightness down. Like, it's still distracting, but it is not a bright fucking flashlight in my face while I'm trying to watch this movie.
Exactly. And it's just like, what the shit, right? So yeah, no. I'm just like, I'm done with it. I'm just done with, like, I really just kind of like, oh my God, you guys are such assholes. Because it's impossible to like we can't, like, it's so weird now to think about that, how much phones and social media have ruined things for just normal, what we used to consider like, and helicopter parenting, like the lack of parenting, how much that has, and I hate being this 46-year-old old man, but it's like literally those three things have ruined most of the entertainment world, so that you cannot go out into the world and not worry about, like, am I going to have a good time or not? Because all of this shit, but on top of the fact that if you talk shit to somebody, I mean, what the fuck is the odds that there's some fucking asshole that's going to pull a gun on you and shoot you because you fucking talk shit to them, because they couldn't, their ego couldn't stand. They couldn't go to a movie and shut the fuck up.
Just shut up. Yeah.
And just exist. Right. Like, yeah. So yeah, you know, it's wild. It is wild to me. It's kind of weird that we got onto this weird, like, soapbox tangent thing, but, you know, sometimes it happens. And I think that we're like, and it's so weird because it's like, I love the movies. You know I do. But we're going to be talking.
We just watched some trailers for some things that,
yeah,
we're super fucking excited to see. Like, this week we got two. One of them's going to be on Hulu, not going to the theater, sadly. But two Predator trailers this week. There are two Predator movies coming out. What world are we living in?
Making up for lost time,
I guess.
Prey director Dan Trachtenberg has decided that he, like, I mean, and we heard, okay, so like, here's the thing, is that we heard about this. We heard about this last year at CinemaCon. Like, Dan Trachtenberg, like, you know, made a presentation talking about his, like, he has a Predator movie. There's two of them. He can't talk about the first one, but the second one will be in theaters. It will be in theaters in 2026. And he just made a presentation, and he said that Elle Fanning was going to be in it. We knew nothing else about it. We now see the fruits of his labor with two of them. Now, they're both not called Predator. They're both called something like what's the first one called? The one that we're getting in May, the animated
Killer
one.
Killer of Killers.
Killer of Killers, which is it looks like it's a triptych, like.
Yeah, it's like an anthology kind of thing about the Predator or different Predators, I guess.
Different Predators in different times.
Yeah, like one is definitely like World War II or maybe World War I-esque thing.
One is set in the Viking era or like, you know, Newfoundland. And then there's a third
like
one,
feudal,
right?
It looks like maybe feudal Japan.
Feudal Japan, yeah. So like all three of these stories all told about different Predators. It's not just the same Predator. It's a very like that each one of them are different. And yeah, man, like I love that we're in this era where I feel like we're in the dawn or the cusp of like we love animation. I mean, of course, we've talked about it. It's one of those things that we love, like Clone Wars, right? I love that I feel like we're getting to the point where creatives grew up with the same shit that we are, and they're coming to power, and they're looking at animation not as a style, a kiddie style, but a tool to tell stories that you don't have the budget to tell in live action. And so, like, we're getting this thing that looks like a bunch of ideas that maybe Trachtenberg had that aren't second-rate ideas, but literally like things like, oh, man, I can't do this in live action. It costs us $300 million.
Oh,
but
yeah, for sure.
Yeah, in animation, it's only going to cost me 25, you know, or 10 or whatever. And I mean, dude, I mean, a dogfight, the dogfight, like the World War II dogfight in like with the Predator, like, ship? Are you fucking kidding me? That's like, first off, it's something I never thought about, right? But secondly, why didn't we ever think about this, right? Like,
this is the kind of stuff that they would explore little bits here and there in the comics.
Yeah.
But yeah, obviously we never got anything like that in the movies. Prey kind of delves into that a little bit with its like past setting, but it doesn't get into like a predator literally stepping into a human war, like a legit war, you know? And it's just such an interesting idea. And then, Badlands is coming out, what, October, November?
November in IMAX. Like they purposely, I guess, from like what I was reading was that 20th Century did not want to make the same, like the deal that they made with Trachtenberg was he was like, we are not making the same mistake with Prey. No Hulu, even though I owe Hulu a movie, and that's how Killer of Killers came to be, is because he owed them. I guess the contract was such was that Prey and Prey, like Prey 2 or whatever you want to call it, the second one was supposed to be on Hulu. And so they couldn't get him, like they couldn't renege from Hulu saying, well, we want a second movie. But 20th Century was like, okay, we want to stay in the Trachtenberg business and we want the Predator. And he basically demanded terms, kind of like Kugler did. He's like, I want it in theaters. I want it in IMAX. And they were like, okay, well, give us proof of concept of what you want to do. And basically, the movie, like, I mean, he basically wrote the script and came up with a visual style and stuff. And they were excited enough. And I mean, we've seen the trailer for it. that they committed to IMAX and like, you know, big screen, full, like, you know, big budget, like, movie for November 7th. And wow. I mean, it looks like, okay, so I've always like, okay, go with me on this. Has it always felt like to you, like it does to me, that the Predator series has always been like shortchanged with budget, but this is the first one where I'm like, oh man, this looks like they actually ponied up a pretty coin for this one.
So I didn't see Shane Black's film, but like, even the biggest budget one, which had to be the one before that, Predators, right?
Yeah, Rodriguez produced one. Yeah.
It does still feel like a little soundstagey, like the Predator has to be hidden, even though we threw more money at it. Like, you don't see a ton. Like, most of the beginning of the movie is about getting to know these characters and like their kind of dynamic, and then you throw the Predator into it, which, I mean, it was still fun, but it does kind of feel a little cheap after a while.
Yeah.
The B movie status of like the first two in the 80s and 90s, you could kind of get away with that, but trying to make this feel like Alien level prestige sci-fi stuff, even though Alien kind of fell away from that, mostly because it crossed over with Predator. it's hard to like, you could never justify it because like, okay, but you're not giving us the Predator. Like, it's still just this kind of B thing. And Badlands looks to just like full on feature a Predator not wearing a mask the entire time. There's no, like, it's the Predator is one of the main characters. I mean, we'll see when the movie hits, but that's definitely like uncharted territory where this franchise on the screen is concerned.
And also, have you heard about Elle Fanning's character?
I heard that she's a twin.
No. So do you know, I don't like, okay, so supposedly this might be spoilery. The rumor is that she's a Weyland Yutani android.
Oh, okay.
Why you see her. Okay. So like the two things that, and Trachtenberg, when directed at it, did not deny it, but did not confirm it. He just kind of was like, he smiled and he walked away. But the two things that kind of confirm it are, she does the thing that what's his name does in Alien Romulus, where the reboot thing with the eyes.
Okay.
And then also there is a Weyland Yutani, there's a Weyland Yutani ship. That is very clearly a Weyland Yutani ship, that's in the trailer. And so supposedly she is like, this is like connective tissues towards Alien, like to the Alien franchise, but not in the way that, like, it's not like there's going to be aliens in it. It's just literally like Weyland Yutani, because it takes place in the future. Weyland Yutani is the company that, that created this android that she's playing.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's going to be 100% accurate, but that's the rumors. Those are the rumors. And, you know, it's interesting to think like, if that is going to be like, if that is actually the case, right? Like if they're actually putting it there, are they making inroads to have Thede's series and Trachtenberg series meet in some way?
That would be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But kind of interesting that it's not full on smack in the face Aliens versus Predator, but still, again, and it would make sense because 20th Century, they're all about, like, I mean, you know, what company isn't about making an Avenger-style movie, right?
Yeah.
So.
I mean, so, that's what the world we live in. I mean, it's been that way for a while. People want to act like it's a new thing, but it's not. Like,
yeah, they're always so soft.
Hollywood wants franchises, man. People love a known product.
But, like, I'm excited for this one because Elle Fanning is not the first ideal person that I think of in regards to a sci-fi adventure horror movie about survival, but it's absolutely the right choice, right? Like, give me Finn Wafee, girl. Like, that's a great actress that hasn't gotten her shot. Give me that actress in this world, because we, like, the Predator is such about, like, and I think that that's what Prey did very well, which was they gave us this heroine that was plucky, Amber Midthunder. That's her name, Thunder. She's so awesome in that movie because you don't expect her to survive. And you, like, she is the last person, even though she's super plucky and the dog is awesome. I like that Trachtenberg is taking that kind of trope. And he's not making a sequel to Prey. He's making, like, this spiritual continuation, if this is the case. And, of course, who doesn't love an android? I mean, to me, at least personally, I love androids in movies. Like, especially, like, in these kind of, in the Predator, like, in the Alien franchise, and you're going to give me. Oh, yeah. This is going to be very interesting to me.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. I'm super excited for, in a year where we're not getting an Alien movie, but we are getting an Alien TV series, and we're getting two Predator movies. Makes me feel like a kid again, man. Even though that never happened when I was a kid.
No, it does. But, I mean, it's like the whole thing of, like, you know what? It did. You know how it did? It, like, so the thing that I think that the reason why we make it wrong, and correct me if I'm wrong, we got this, but we just got it in comic book form.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
how good it is. When this, for us, it was always in comic books, right? It was never in, like, real life. It was never, like, in order. We would have some of the shit, let alone, like, a live action version, right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, man. Like, it's weird to watch the whole thing of, like, things that we had are really, like, coming to life on the big screen. And it kind of makes me feel like you said, it makes me feel like a kid. Like, it gets me excited, like, the way that I used to be excited about as a kid, reading and reading Starlog and Fangoria and hearing about these, like, what-if projects and thinking, this will never. I mean, like, as much as we loved, like, you know, seeing, like, you know, Bob Hoskins as Wolverine, we knew it was never going to happen. We knew Richard Donner was never going to fucking direct a movie about the X-Men. But then, like, we got to be a certain age and they did make an X-Men movie. And now we're in a reality where, like, get another X-Men movie, and it's probably going to be more comic accurate than we've ever gotten in our lives. And those, like, weird wild cat things that we always thought were never going to be possible are now possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
literally possible.
Yeah.
I'm really excited by these two projects. You know, it's going to be a good year for animation. Like, let's be honest, unexpectedly, because we've got a couple of Star Wars projects that are going to be animated that are coming our way. And we've got this Predator one now. We still have What If coming our way. The What If Zombies. What If Zombies. And we still have the rumored, I mean, we're still, like, if I hear the rumors, it's like, what, November is when we're going to get the second season of X-Men 97?
I mean, maybe. I'll be shocked if it's not before the end of the year.
Yeah.
But I don't, they've been not hush hush, but it's been like very, like we're not openly talking about it, which feels weird. I don't know if that's something to do with Bo DeMeo and everything there. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. It is a little weird that they've been hush hush about something that literally was a huge, I mean, like, let's be honest, it was huge. Like that, like X-Men 97 was like as big as an animated project could be and as successful as one can be. It was big. Like that's as big as you kind of get from a Marvel animated series because of us like who grew up with that show. And it kind of like, I think it also because it connected, like it wasn't just like play. It was a damn good series. And we kind of want to see more of it, right? So,
yeah.
So we shall see. Yeah, we shall see. Something that I like, we've been kind of really kind of clamoring for, we finally got. We got a full trailer for Fantastic Four. And yep. What are your thoughts now that we've seen the one guess that you had was like a big. Yes, that definitely was the thing, right? Like, you kind of was like, I think that they're doing the storyline. And I was like, as soon as I saw Sue, I was like, oh, shit, he was right. They're really doing that storyline.
Yeah, I mean, we're getting Sue pregnant. We got our first look at the Lady Silver Surfer, which I still don't think is confirmed that it's Shala Ball and not Norrin Radd. But I can't shake the feeling that's what they're doing. I think I said pretty when we got the first teaser, which really was a trailer because it was like a minute and a half. I think we talked about us not seeing Reed's power set, and it me saying like, first of all, it's always gonna look goofy. It doesn't matter what kind of movie you're telling. And also, like, it's difficult to do, so they're probably still working on it. And we got a little glimpse of that, and I think it justified what I had said. It's always going to look goofy, and they're still working on it. So
yeah.
Because even that brief glimpse, I was just like, yeah, it doesn't matter what you do. And I'm not going to hate on it for looking goofy because it's a goofy power. It just is. Really is. So,
there's no way around it. There really isn't, right? Like, it just, you know.
I mean, they changed Miss Marvel as a, like, her power set as a character, because basically in the comics, she has a very similar power to Mr. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And in the show, they changed that, like, to make it this, like, energy expansion thing. Because it looks goofy and takes too much work for it to still look goofy when you're finished rendering all those special effects.
No, it does. Like, yeah. And, but also, you kind of can't get away from, like, it's
with
such
Mr. Fantastic, you can't. Like,
yeah.
It's intrinsic to the character. Far less so than people want to make you believe that Norrin Radd or Silver Surfer being the male Norrin Radd. I don't feel like that's intrinsic to the character at all.
No. Especially considering we've gotten both versions. And like, it's not like they've ever changed Reed Richards' power in any shape or time in the history of ever, right? Yeah. Like, it's always been, that's always been the thing. Whereas, like, Silver Surfer, yeah, we've had a couple of different iterations, and there's been a female lady, like, there's been a lady Silver Surfer. So I don't understand why you would, like, again, like, it's just fucking asshole.
I understand if Silver Surfer is your favorite character, and, like, you've been waiting for a real, true, which I would argue you got a true interpretation of Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
He was not the problem with that second Fantastic Four movie.
No,
not. And you were excited for your favorite character to enter the MCU. Look, I get it. Cable is my favorite comic book character. And when they said they were going to do Cable in Deadpool 2, I was worried when I found out, like, hey, we're going to have to change a lot of the basis for this character. I was a little worried, like, that's my favorite character. I don't like that you're changing it. Is it my Cable? No, but it's a good depiction of it. Like, far better than, like, Steph and I I've shown her a little bit of the original X-Men show, TV series. And, like, you get to when Cable gets introduced there, and it's like, yeah, that's not Cable, man. Like, it looks like Cable, but that's not Cable. I do kind of understand that, but like, okay, man, like you have the character, you have the comics, it sucks you're not going to get Norrin Radd, but this isn't a Silver Surfer movie. You were never going to get that. Maybe just roll with it. It looks good. That's the one thing we can say. Part of me also wonders if, like, changing Silver Surfer to female wasn't, like, a ploy from the creators, or Feige specifically, because of the changes they've made to the Human Torch, Johnny Storm, and how that character is now going to be played. We've always known Johnny to be a womanizing hothead, and that apparently will not be the case at all. And I feel like a lot of assholes are going to be like, this isn't the real Johnny Storm. Like, he's not hitting on girls all the time. Like, I don't know. Part of me just feels like that's going to come. Maybe it won't. Maybe it won't. But beside all that, I think the trailer looks really good.
Yeah, it does. Like, I love the visual style. I like that we're getting glimpses of things, but they're not showing us everything. I know they're not showing us everything, and that's kind of great. I kind of love that. I love that we don't know the Galactus factor of everything, right? Like, we've seen glimpses of him. We see how he's going, like, you know, we've seen the scale, which is, I find truly hilarious, because, like, you know, that's always been a problem with Galactus, right? Especially in the best versions of Galactus. Like, you know, you can say what you want as a fan of that, of Silver Surfer and Mobius and Galactus, but Mobius picked and choosed how he wanted Galactus to look, right? And yep. I feel like that's going to be something that they're going to probably factor in, because it very much so looks like the small glimpses we've seen is very much the Mobius style Galactus, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with that. But it looks like a groovy 60s Irwin Allen, fantastic. You know what it reminds me of? A lot of, like, the Irwin Allen of the 60s, like the. I know it sounds weird, but go with me on this. It looks like a combination of Fantastic Voyage and Lost in Space. Yeah, that whole kind of mid-60s adventure sci-fi romp, but like also like the Kennedy administration, like the whole, like, you know, the positive world and like anything's possible, but like, you know, that kind of very. It feels analogous also to like Star Trek 2009, where it's like, it's not necessarily like iPhone centric, like, you know what I mean? But it's got that, the future is bright and like, it's not dark and dour. And I kind of love it, because that's what the Fantastic Four should be, right? Like, you know, I've always felt like if it was going to be a Fantastic Four movie, like I think we've always, like, I've been on record even before they started making this film that, like, you know, it should have been in the 60s, and it absolutely looks like it's made in the 60s, and that's where it works, right? Now, once you get the basis of it and once you get the family and everything down, you can go wherever you want, right? You can time travel, you can alternate reality, whatever. But so far, it looks really good. Like, I like what I'm seeing, and I like the fact that they're not showing me everything. Kind of like with Thunderbolts, they're not showing, like, the worst kept secret for every fan is they're not telling you who the ultimate, like, not villain, but, like, the thing that they have to face off against, even though anybody who, like, who's watching it and knows who the characters are knows exactly who it is. And I'm not going to ruin it. I mean, I'll know as of Monday if the whole thing of, like, who we think it is. But with this, with, like, Fantastic Four, they're just giving us image and a feeling, right? They're not giving us plot.
Yeah.
And I like that.
Yeah.
I wish more movies would do that.
Yeah. It's funny because, not to change lanes, but the studio this week kind of has a, like, it's the episode is not about what you see in a trailer, but it kind of is.
Yes, it's
like,
is.
Oh, we have to do, like, you get this little glimpse into, like, the making of a trailer and, like, these compromises you have to make from, like, marketing, saying, like, we need this to get people in. And then, but, like, we can't do this because it puts the distributors off. And, like, the creator of the project going, like, yeah, but my fans want to see this. And, yeah, it was an interesting little, like, 5-minute aside in an episode of the studio this week.
Yeah, no, it was. And my favorite part about the show, about that episode, was, like, we finally get a, like, I know it's not finally, but we get a love interest for Matt. And it's so weird that it's Rebecca Hall, who I've always loved, but it's so such a kind of, like, it's such a peculiar choice, but also very much on brand what you would expect from this show. But I love that both of them are terrible people. Like, both of them are full of themselves assholes at the end of the day. Like, the doctors are so insufferable.
Yeah.
So insufferable. And neither one of them can let it go. Like, the thing is like, if Matt just lets it go, he has kind of, like, an amazing woman as his girlfriend. Like, yeah. I just kept on, like, that was the cringe for me, was like,
like, I just need you to say what I do is as important as what you do. And it's like, nah, man. Like, you're actively delusional. But the flip side is, like, when they're being such douchebags,
yeah,
and he outbids them for the golf trip, I was with him. I was like, fuck those guys, take that golf trip.
The look on their faces after they've belittled him, it's a human kind of interaction, right? Like, it's the one time that they really got me with Matt. Like, most of the time I can sit there and I can laugh at him,
yeah,
and not, like, and not cringe with him. But it was the one time where I was like, these fucking motherfuckers, these assholes. Like, in my favorite part, my favorite line, and it's not my favorite line of the week. There's another one, 8 Ball and $2 million. Fuck, I lost my shit on that one this week, but we'll get to that in a minute. But it's when she says, I'm curing cancer, and he knows he's got her, and he looks at her, he goes, you're curing cancer? You've cured cancer.
Yeah.
And I'm like, It was the moment where I was like, oh man, you don't want to win that argument, but fuck yeah, Matt.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. It's the one episode that really got me hooked into him and not, like, at a distance. Like, most of the time I can watch this show and kind of laugh at him because he's such a fucking prick and he's so full of himself. And, but also, like, enough to where it's not cringy, because it's like, Rogan is very likable. Like, the one thing I can take away from this series is he's kind of been able to channel his boyish charm into, I know it's going to sound weird, but to a point where it's not Arrested Development. Like, he truly is a, he's not a manly man like John Hamm is in Mad Men, but he's finally matured to a point where it's like, yeah, he's not a boy. He's not a teenager. He's fucking running. Like, I actually believe him as Matt Remick, head of a studio, like over Ike Barinholtz, over Catherine O'Hara, over Catherine Hahn, like people that are like, and it's not like they're being acting differential. It's just literally there's something about the way he carries himself. And I think that the reason why it made it so clear to me in this one is he kind of shifts in this episode where when he first starts meeting people, it's like he has this confidence and then he loses it. And then it's like this weird shifty thing where he goes back and forth between gaining it and losing it. But it's gaining it for the wrong reasons, right? Like the whole thing of like outbidding them for the thing. It's like $200,000. It's a very interesting episode.
And it was it was like a different turn for the show altogether because it was outside of the movie stuff. And it was nice to see them kind of break their own format a little bit. Because like I kept waiting for the trailer to be the problem. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like,
and it wasn't. It was all the personal stuff. Like everything in regards to editing the trailer, getting approval, all went completely smoothly, which is the opposite of everything we've seen from this show thus far. Like everything is a chaotic clusterfuck and somehow they come through. But this episode, it was his personal life that was chaos and everything at work was going smoothly, which is, you know, 100% intentional, I think, on their part. Just to be like, yeah, sometimes work goes really, really well and your personal life is absolute dog shit. So are you, you know, you just create that chaos elsewhere. But yeah, this is a really, really good episode. Apple is, you know, I mean, I know we talk about it a lot and I don't watch nearly enough of their stuff, but God, man, it's just, it's prestige TV and not enough people are watching it. Steph has got me excited. So she's reading the books, but there's a new series coming out next month, I think, called Murderbot.
Yeah. Have you seen the trailer?
Yeah. She showed me the trailer.
Yeah.
She was like, she told me about it a couple of weeks ago. I think she's like, I'm going to start reading these books. There's a show coming. And then they released the trailer and she was like, you got to watch the trailer. Cause I think this will be a show we watch together. And I was like, that looks excellent.
Yeah, it really does. Like, that one looks really good. Like, anytime, like I just said, like, anytime an android is, like, the android is the person that you're rooting for, and humanity is, like, the shittiness, I'm always for it. I don't know what that says about me. I mean, I guess it makes me a little misanthropic, I guess. But, I mean, you know, read the room, read the world. You know, maybe a little bit of Murderbot wouldn't be bad. Anywho, that one I'm actually looking forward to very much so. Like, you know, and then also like Alexander Skarsgård, anytime you can get him playing a psychopath, it's like the perfect casting. He's just too good looking to be anything else. But the studio continues to be one of my favorite, things on TV right now. Just because of just how well written it is and how kind of they veer. They always trying to take the most unexpected kind of turns, but the most expected turns. So yeah, I'm looking forward to next week as always. So Tingus.
I need $10 million in an eight ball.
An eight ball.
Where's Kelvin? I can usually talk some sense into him.
Him. Oh my God. I don't see how they're okay. Like, so we're talking Righteous Gemstones, guys. I'm going to be honest with you, and I want to know your opinion. How are they finishing this in two episodes?
Dude, I don't know, man. So, brief aside, another show that I love just wrapped up its series finale, The Conners, aired its finale yesterday. A two-part, which it really wasn't a two-part. And they had been building up to what I thought was going to be like this big, big thing. It sounds weird to say spoilers for that show, but so, you know, they killed off Roseanne's character and then rebooted it as the Conners. And this season's been building up to like them. They got convinced to sue the drug company for her death. And so the last episode, most of it is Dan giving like a deposition about what happened and kind of getting into it with somebody from the drug company. And it ends with the drug company cutting them a check. And you're building up to this, like, oh, this is going to be like, I don't know if you remember when the original show, like the last season of Roseanne, the original last season of Roseanne.
Yeah. Didn't they win the lottery?
They won the lottery, and then it also wound up being like this dream thing. I think it was very fucking weird.
Yeah.
But like, the whole like we made it kind of thing, which took the edge off of what that show was. Mm-hmm. I thought, well, here we go. They're gonna do this again. This is weird. They do something that flies in the face of that, which I think is absolutely intentional. The big reveals that the drug company cut them a check for $700.
Oh, wow.
And they kind of all, like, Dan just starts, like, laughing. And he's like, of course, because that's who this family has always been. Like, we're hapless, luckless losers. And like, that's what we are. And anytime we think we're gonna break good, the universe reminds us who we are. And it was a fitting way for that show to end. Very anticlimactic. They do have a moment where the characters are really just going home, but you can tell it's like the last scene that they shot and everybody's saying goodbye to each other. And it's very, very emotional, but it's very, very brief. And I know Gemstones is not that show, but I think we're going to get something akin to not a big climax, just a weird kind of ride off into the sunset, even though these characters don't deserve that.
So my fear is, especially with who they introduced this week, my feeling is that Eli's gonna die.
Yeah.
And we're gonna get his funeral.
I mean, it's fitting that both of these shows star John Goodman.
No, absolutely. But I feel like that's what's going to happen, because I feel like when I really look at it, like this season with like him finding a bit of happiness, but like everybody like doing everything that they can possibly do to end it,
giving him the ammunition to end it himself. Like, they plant all those seeds and. Yeah, and so much so that I'm with Eli. Like, I have my doubt too. Like, is she telling the truth? Like, her story definitely seems really plausible, but like, also when given all that information, you know, I don't know that I would have drawn a different conclusion. I think his issue is that he wasn't like, hey, so this is everything that just got laid at my doorstep. I don't know how to feel about all this. Instead of like kind of condemning her almost about things that may not be remotely true.
And also it makes sense to me. Eli is a very specific man. he can do a lot of things. Like, you know, he can eat a bunch of weed gummy. He can have premarital sex. But I feel like there's something, like, I feel like he's only progressive to a certain point.
Yeah.
And regardless of what she says, he cannot believe her. And that's going to be his downfall. Like, that's ultimately going to be the downfall, right? Is that a piece of shit like it? And man, you know, Michael Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer Rooker coming in very late in this series tells me everything I need to know about this dude in the best shorthand way possible, right? Like, of course he's the guy at the beginning of the season that did everything, that stole everything, including the Bible, right? It just kind of sets it up for a very biblical downfall, right? Like, there's two episodes left. I just don't know how this is going to happen unless it happens very, very, very quickly. Like, it happens almost shockingly, right? Like, in the way that I feel like, I'm reminded of David Gordon Green's All the Pretty Girls, I think it's his second film, where it's like this, like, the first half of it is this very ponderous, beautiful, almost twee romance between Paul Schneider and Zooey Deschanel, and then, man, the carpet comes, like the carpet is ripped underneath you after a certain something happens. And I will not, I actually recommend people see that movie because it's a wonderful movie and it's very different than The Gemstones. But the violence in which the rug is pulled out from under you is literally the way that real life happens. I remember seeing that in the theater and just having, like, it's like that gut punch that you don't expect to happen. And it happens, and it's like, it's a mean, nasty turn, but that's life, right? That's something, like, shit like that happens all the time in life. And it happens to people in their early 20s. I feel like McBride and this group, the North Carolina Mafia, comedic mafia that they are, I feel like they're setting us up for something that kind of gut-punchy tragic. Like, literally, Rooker could come in and literally shoot Eli in the chest and it be done. And the reason why I say that is it's the whole thing of, like, the last moment with the Bible and him, like, and Rooker's looking at the Bible and we seeing Elijah, the original Elijah, and thinking about everything he did in the first episode of season 4. And it would make perfect cyclical sense if something like that were to happen to the Gemstones, because yeah. If we think about it, they've been trading. I mean, and even this week, is it this week's episode or was it last week's episode where it was last week's episode because it was the flashback episode where they were being protested because of all of the shenanigans and tomfoolery and, like, trickery they've pulled over the years. And if we think about it, this is something that's happened for the entirety of what we've seen from them. They're always in trouble with the community because of them bilking money and using religion as a shield. It's interesting. I don't know. I was wondering what your thoughts were on something like this.
It's we've talked about it. It's this weird kind of mirror because, like, I've lived through this stuff. I've been not entrenched in anything on this level, but, like, I've seen it. I've been a member more or less of, like, kind of a super church, you know, nothing on this level, nothing global, but, like, you know, one of the bigger churches in the city that I was born in, you know, one of those, like, we have to have 4 services a day because we have so many people. You know, it's not a day, but every Sunday, you know what I mean? It's very weird to be able to look at all of that now. And, but, like, also I still know a lot of those people and, like, I still believe that a lot of them are good people, like maybe, you know, just pointed in the wrong direction, but not bad people. But I mean, Eli would fall in that category, you know, a good person who maybe is just a little misdirected, whereas his children are just absolute shits. Although Kelvin gets easily the best moment in this season so far.
Yeah.
Because his speech at the end, like, and his, like, this revelation to himself about all of this, how ridiculous it's been. We'll see if that sticks. Because it's immediately undercut by, like, you won, and he kind of seems to just fall right back into being Kelvin Gemstone. But, like, he does have this very brief moment of realizing how ridiculous it all is, how much they've wasted, and how much more they could be doing. I don't know. It's a really, really solid episode with a lot of great small comedic bits, like Uncle Baby Billy. Like, Walton Goggins is, we've said it so many times, but just such a, like, he's a national fucking treasure. And
he is. And finally get his first Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm excited. So.
Yeah. Yeah, a national treasure. I mean, like, but can we just be honest for a second? Like, it should have happened at this point. It couldn't have happened in his 30s or his 40s. It had to be in his early 50s. Like, it's just like there's some guys that need to age into the comfortability of being able to just have, like, the fame and the roles that he's getting right now. It's just perfectly designed for him. It's like, it's like it was meant to be, right? Like, I make an equate, like, I was telling somebody, I was like, you know, Walton Goggins is essentially the Charles Bronson of comedy. He, like, didn't get his superstardom until way late, like, later than most people do. I mean, everybody knew him, but, like, it's not until right now where, I think, what is he like? I think he's like 52 that he's having his moment. And I have a feeling it's going to last a lot longer than just a couple of years, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. I mean, Baby Billy, man. Baby Billy Freeman. did you want to talk a little bit about that? Like, just the storyline itself is so ridiculous, but.
I mean, it's a weird, it's not even a spoof because it's just kind of a thing that happened. It's taking this trope that we saw a lot of in the 90s and before. It kind of started dwindling in the like 2000s. You saw more people playing like age appropriate roles. But it, like, definitely pre 2000s, you would see damn near 30 plus year olds playing 18 year olds on TV, from be it The Breakfast Club or Beverly Hills 90210, any of those like teeny shows. Now you have like 22 year olds playing like 16 year olds, which is still a little like, but like when you think about how old, almost any of those kids. Brian Austin Green was the only one that was an actual teenager, I think.
Teenager, yeah. Like, Gabriel Carteris was, like, literally 39 when she was playing a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, let that sit in. Like, that's fucking ridiculous.
So, yeah, it's kind of a play on that where Billy has just decided that the kid he's cast to play Teen Jesus. Billy's gonna do it for him.
Yes. Oh my god. And then he goes to the kids asking for $2 million and an 8 ball for reshoots. and their interactions, like, there's something special. Like, if Danny McBride just worked with Walton Goggins and Walton Goggins just worked with Danny McBride for the rest of their lives, like Hope and Crosby, like some demented Southern Hope and Crosby, I would be completely fucking happy because of the golden exchanges that we get between these two are something out of, like, I don't mean, like, they're so wild that they could only be, they almost feel like they come from reality. Like, these are things that have been said to other people in this kind of context, because it's just, they're just, it is just gold. I sit there, like, I have to stop it sometimes when they're doing, because it's so stupidly funny. Like, I don't even know where they come up. Like, if it's them vibing off of one another and just improvising, or if it's actually written in the script. And I could see it either or way, just because McBride is just a lunatic. I don't know if I'd ever want to meet him or spend time with him. But fuck, man, like, he is a funny man. And him writing for like Walton Goggins is just, that's like next level, like, amazing to me.
It's an incredible show, man. I can't believe they can do what they do, that it doesn't create more of a stir, which I point to, like, that just unfortunately means not enough people are watching it.
Yeah.
And that they're able to do it and it not feel false. Like, it is goofy and weird and ridiculous, and like what's his name with the capuchin this season? Oh, my so God. Bizarre.
Like, that's straight up Monkey Shines, dude. Like, they're doing a remake of Monkey Shines. If Judy dies, I would not be surprised.
Yeah.
If Dr. Watson kills Judy, because of the three, it's really weird to me to say, of those three characters, she is the most unrepentantly fucking, like, terrible person.
She really is the worst. Like, I kind of go back and forth on Jesse and Kelvin. Like, they're not great, but they do have, like, a sense of, like, familial loyalty. Like, as much as they don't get along, he was gonna fucking, like, throw down because of them bad mouthing Kelvin and being gay. And, like, you know, whereas, I don't know, Judy just flips, man. And it's so upsetting sometimes. So, yeah, I'm with you. Like, if one of them had to bite it, like, she's definitely the one that needs to go.
But also, like, Dr. Watson, like, is, like, this episode kind of convinced me that I feel like Dr. Watson is going to murder fucking Judy. Like, it's just, there's just no way around it. And she's such a shitty human being. Like,
yeah.
And she doesn't ever get better. Like, that's part of the comedy of Judy.
Like, even when she has a moment of heart, it's very, very quickly reversed. It's just like, oh no, she's a terrible person.
Like the whole thing of, like, her going, like, her being inside of the house, and she was like the funniest part about the whole exchange between her and Jesse is that when she says, "I was here taking a shit, what do you expect me to do? Take a shit in the woods?" The funny part to me is that it's not that that's a throwaway line, it's that's the fucking truth. Judy wasn't there to go find Kelvin, where Jesse really was.
Yeah,
she literally stopped by to take a shit because she didn't want to. She was pitching a turtle, right? Like, that's what makes it funny to me. But also, that's her. Like, and the funnier part is that when they do the flashbacks, the girl, the young lady that plays Judy gets Judy right in so many ways. And it makes you feel like, yeah, she has never been a good person. Like, never been a good person. Like, she's just been a terrible, terrible little shit. And she's grown up to be a terrible, terrible shit. And so yeah, like, again, I'm putting money on Dr. Watson does something to her, you know, does something to her in the whole thing of like, I just can't believe they're getting away with doing basically a Monkey Shines remake within this fucking movie, within this show. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
You're doing this?
I think it's going to be wind up being, that Dr. Watson tries to kill her, and that's going to be the motivating factor for BJ to stand up and walk again.
That wouldn't be a bad idea, because then it becomes the true Monkey Shines kind of it does the payoff of the whole ending for Monkey Shines, which is ridiculous. But
yeah,
that's actually a good one. the thing that I feel like has been shortchanged this season is Keith. Like, I really miss Keith. Like, he's been more of a prop this year than an actual like story or like a storyline with Kelvin. Like, Kelvin has been very much on his own, to which, like, I feel like the first three seasons have always had them as like an intertwined will they or won't they couple.
Yeah, I feel like now that you've flipped the switch and they're full on just a couple, I think they've run out of like bits to do with him. When they're looking for going into the house and he's like hanging upside down.
Yeah, that's great.
That was really good. But yeah, he has not had a ton of like truly, truly great moments this season. So, but I do think it's because they're like, oh, well, we don't really know what to do because we made you together. Like, we've lost something there.
Yeah, it's the jacket, or it's the Cheers thing. It's the moonlighting thing. It's like once you've gotten them together, it just runs out of steam unless you're a really, 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 really great writer and you know what to do with people being couples. It's very rare, but occasionally it does happen. You know what? Like, this has nothing to do with this, except for it kind of does, because it's a show about very complex, terrible human beings. Have you heard of Dying for Sex?
Yeah, I'm intrigued.
So my wife really was, because she's a huge stan for Elizabeth Merriweather, who's New Girl writer, like New Girl showrunner. And she'll watch anything that she does. So, like, and she loves Michelle Williams. And so we're watching it. And I was going to give you a kind of recommend for it, because the thing is though, it's the cancer thing that really kind of, it's kind of flippant with cancer, but it's not. And I feel like it's a good show.
I don't have a problem with people being flipped with cancer. I think there are a lot of people out there who have problems with other people being flipped with cancer. So,
okay. Then I would actually give it a try.
I mean, the cast is great. Like, I love Michelle Williams, but Jenny Slate has long been, like, since the Pawnee days, like, on my list of, like, this chick is not appreciated enough.
as the best friend, she gets a great role. And Rob Delaney, it's probably the best thing that he's done. But it's interesting because it deals with cancer head on in the same way it deals with sex, which is very frank. So as long as you're okay with that, it's a very interesting show. I really, like, I can't say, I have to wait for the last episode of the season to kind of really kind of, because it's like one of those things that it's contingent on where does it land in the, like, at the end of it. But I think we're 7 episodes in, and it's a 9 episode series or a 10 episode series, and we're there. And I feel like it's going to land it. It's probably the best writing that Elizabeth Merriweather has done. Like, it's strong. It's super strong. It's super complex. But again, it all depends on how you feel about cancer in, like, you know, somebody with stage four cancer, and their kind of like flippant attitude towards it. Though everything I understand, it's based on a true story, and it's based off of a podcast of a woman that did a podcast while she had stage four cancer, and all of the things that she was trying, like all of the experimentation with sex, because she hadn't had an orgasm all of her life. Like her entire life, she never had an orgasm. And it was like, after she finds out that she has stage four cancer, she like breaks up with her husband, who's played by one of the Duplass brothers, and who's like just a ripe shit.
He's really good. It's Jay, right?
It's Jay. Jay.
He's really good at playing that. Like Mark Duplass always has this like mischievous kind of like playful quality to him, but yeah. Jay is just good at playing like a louse, like just you're like, this thing sucks, man.
and it also has great supporting cast members like David Rashke, who, I mean, he will always be Sledgehammer to me, shows up as her doctor. Sissy Spacek shows up as her mother. Like it's a great cast, and it's really strong writing. It's very unique. I would say give it a spin, see what you think. The first episode is definitely gives you an idea of what you're in store for, like regarding like how it treats cancer, and how it treats sex, and how it just generally has an attitude. But I will say, like, Michelle Williams, she's probably going to get another like award out of this. I mean, she just, like, I always forget how good this woman is, and then I watch her in something and I go, fuck, how is she this good? And that's just kind of like what the show is. So just like an interesting like a soft recommend.
I'll check it out.
I'll add it to the list. Yeah, sorry I didn't mention it at the beginning of the episode, but we had other things that we were definitely in.
Yeah, we were too busy being old men about things.
Exactly. Speaking of old men. did we want to? Is there anything else we wanted to finish up with Righteous Gemstones?
No. Let's talk a little bit about The Last of Us and say absolutely spoilers for The Last of Us season 2. So, I don't even have words. I mean, it's up there with, I guess spoilers for a lot of, it's up there with Ned Stark. It's up there with...
any of the Starks.
Yeah, that's true.
I've told you, I played both video games. And I knew this was coming. I didn't realize how soon it was coming.
I haven't played the games. Okay. But unfortunately, because they've permeated pop culture and a large part of like what I intersect with, I knew. Mm-hmm. But they came out and said that, like, okay, I think they gave them 2 more seasons or 3 more seasons pickup. I don't remember that. Yeah. It was like game 2 was going to be covered over like 2 seasons, maybe 3. I don't remember. But it wasn't going to be all 1 season. Like season 1 is mostly just the first game with some added stuff to it.
Yes. Okay. So here's the thing. So there's a time jump in part two. In the game part 2, there's a time jump. So when they said they were doing season 2 and then they were getting a season 3 instantly, I understood why they were doing it, especially if Druckmann and Mazin were following the storyline, that there was going to be a time jump. But I was expecting this season to at least go to midway point.
I thought it would be the expanded.
And that's all we got because I lost power, so we didn't get to talk about The Last of Us, but we will next week. Until then, go check out everything we do over at xwingfiles.com. Go check out Adam's website where you can read our written work. movieowl.com, and we'll be back next week talking about Thunderbolts, of course, and hopefully some Last of Us. Bye. Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together, you with me now. Nerds ruin everything.